This episode of Football 301, Charles McDonald joins me to recap week two Sunday NFL action. Very fun games today, starting from the morning all the way to the night rock fight. We recap all of it, analyze all of it, overreact to all of it. Super fun show. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome to Football 301. I am your host, Nate Tice. I am joined by Mr. Four Verts, Charles McDonald, and we're coming to you right after Sunday Night Football, where the Falcons, your Falcons, Mr. Four Verts,
that's right,
beat the Vikings in Minnesota 22-6. It's time for the late hit. Charles, first off, how was your day and how was your night now that the Falcons come away with this victory in a rock fight, if I'm being honest, in a total rock fight?
Yeah. My day was fine. I mean, it was busy during that 1 p.m. slate, then it slowed down in the 4 o'clock slate with some games that were something resembling football. And then this one, I feel like, was also something resembling football because there was a lot of slop here. But Bijan Robinson is the second reincarnation of Christ. He's come back and he's blessing us with his holy juke moves. And now he's seems like he's about strong as everyone is trying to tackle him too. So he's finishing runs too. Just really an incredible player. And then the Falcons defense, I don't know, look, I'm still not there on the defense, but hey, at least you beat up a bad offensive line, which is what used to be like in question for them in the past always. I mean, like, I've watched this team go through a whole season with less than 20 sacks in like very recent history. So to see something like that, it was cool, but I still think there's a ways to go before you can say, oh, Falcons defense has arrived, where they totally nailed it. Because I mean, Justin School started in that game with a rookie quarterback behind him. He should rack up a lot of sacks, you know.
And they did. Ryan Kelly also got hurt, the starting center. He had a concussion and left the game, which he has a history of, which is something to keep an eye on, because now you're talking about an inexperienced center with an inexperienced quarterback for the Vikings. Aaron Jones banged up his hammy as well. But yeah, J.J. McCarthy was sacked 6 times on 16 pressures. His pressure to sack rate, Charles, so far through 2 games is 56.3%. He has an 18% sack rate, both dead last, obviously. So just for reference, anything over like 10% is kind of the scary point for quarterbacks. You have to play a certain way to, you know, prime right. Russell Wilson's like a good way to like over, Jaden Daniels can come over that a little bit, just how their play style. Pressure sack, like low 20s is kind of like, okay, anything over that, we're starting to get a little scary. That's more, you know, really looking at college prospects. So double, kind of like the acceptable rate. I know the O-line's kind of beat up, and I agree with you. I'm kind of with you on the Falcons defense. It's like it's looking a little better than I was expecting through 2 games, and they're actually doing a couple looks. Then at the same time, there's plays where they only have 10 players out on the field, and things. And then AJ Terrell gets hurt, and I'm like, okay, so now they kind of get some pressure up front, and then now I don't trust them to cover anybody. But still. Bijan Robinson rocks. Tyler Allgeier rocks. Haven't you had a comparison for those two for that kind of combo and their play styles?
Probably, but I've forgotten. LT and Michael Turner. That's what it was. Yeah. That's what I was compared to when they drafted Bijan. Yeah.
It's your only time when you get positive is when you talk about the running backs. Dude, single time.
I'm already mourning the day when Allgeier gets a bag somewhere else, but I know he's going to ball out as a starting running back somewhere. That's a really good backfield to have for especially where they are with their rookie quarterback, but second year quarterback who hasn't started very many games. And you know, tonight was up and down for Penix. There were some nice. I mean, it was the Michael Penix experience, right? There were some really nice throws, like the rollout to his right, which is a crossbody throw for him, which got Drake where Drake fumbled was nice. But then you know, like going into half, there's the two chances that he has to like pin one in the end zone for a touchdown on back-to-back throws, and either the throws even ended up like in the field of play. So you know, it's a roller coaster with him, but I think the highs feel so good that you kind of forget about some of the intermediate stuff that you're going through. But hey, it's a process, and again, they got Bijan Robinson.
I'm coming around on it. Like I'm coming around on Penix. Like it's like I enjoy watching him play. Like he knows what he wants to do. He kind of knows what he is. And I always appreciate quarterbacks that kind of know what they are. And I don't know, he usually doesn't take sacks that much. He got hit a couple times tonight, you know, but I think he gets the ball out quickly. I know they made a big deal about his release, which I think is funny. But I mean, the formula works for this Falcons offense. He didn't have to be great tonight. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, if you just looked at the math, the quarterbacks tonight combined for a success rate of 31%. Penix had 8 successful dropbacks on 24 attempts, 33%. JJ McCarthy had 7 successful dropbacks on 23 drop or 7 successful on 23 dropbacks. That was when the score was 22-6 before McCarthy threw that final pick. So it's actually probably even lower now. Yeah, but I'm coming around on it. And I think the math of it works. I like how he moves around the O-line. He has confidence to get the ball out. He's giving Kyle Pitts chances now. And Kyle Pitts looks great. Really moving well, even blocking and moving well. So there's more positive feelings about this Falcons team, obviously coming out with a national victory like this against another NFC team that they're going to be competing for a playoff spot with, hopefully. But I mean, Bijan, 22 carries, 143 yards. Algier, 16 carries, 76 yards. When the score was 22-6, the Vikings had a rushing success rate of 56%. The Falcons had a rushing success rate of 60%. Anything over 50% is like historical. So 60%, good day at the office for the Falcons run game, which is exactly what you want to see. Well, I got to talk about, though. Oh, what were we going to say?
I was about to say, this game, like, from a Vikings defense perspective, is a lot of the fears, I think, that had come into the season where it's like, I know Brian Flores is a great defensive coordinator. I don't think anyone can dispute that at any point now. But when you trade so much for JJ McCarthy and Dallas Turner, like, you see the depth issues on the other side, where when they needed to stop the run at the end of the game, they couldn't get it, and they were just getting stampeded off the field. So it's going to be an interesting season for the Vikings defense, because we saw today, like, when they're out a couple guys, it gets thin really, really quick.
Yep. It's stars and scrubs. I mean, they are all in on that kind of method. And I know they've created some fun depth. You know, like, guys like Naylor are really showing up. Some of the young guys on defense show up. But like you say, it's top heavy. One guy goes down, there's a huge domino effect, especially at offensive line, which was already their position they were trying to revamp. And I just think McCarthy right now is just, you know, I thought the run game has succeeded how I kind of thought it would go going into this season. I was like, okay, this is kind of what I was expecting, like a top 10 rushing success rate kind of run game. But it's just every time they pass, it's an adventure. And everything just feels very elongated with McCarthy right now, as far as his decision making, his mechanics. Everything is very robotic, and he's a good athlete. So that's always a little, his mind is working very fast and slow at the same time. You know, he's trying to do the right thing. That's why all of his best throws right now are to the outside. It's like a telltale sign that a quarterback, that's the only thing he can see cleanly right now, and he's confident in. He had the great throw to Jefferson at the end of the half. That was as much as design, and a incredible route by Jefferson. It was a great cover two beater, you know, corner post. But man, you can't take that many sacks. You have to hit the throws when you do have them. The pick, his first pick was inside and late to the out on a comeback or an outbreaker. The last one was like, whatever. I'm willing to shrug those ones away. But yeah. Oh, he took the strip sack, which it was 5-man protection. It's not totally the Anthony Richardson play that we saw 500 videos about. At first I did think that it looked like there's a miscommunication because there was the backup center, and it looked like the backup center changed the slide without telling anybody. That's just my assumption after first glance at it, but I'll have to watch it again, on film and everything. But
is that the one where O'Neal like crashed into, or I don't remember if it was a strip sack. There was one play, like it dead ass looked like a Madden glitch, because Brian O'Neal and Will Freeze, they were blocking each other for like a second as two Falcons ran past them. I'm like, what the hell happened here? But someone telling them to slide the wrong way would make sense, because there's no reason that you guys should be blocking each other, right?
Right. That means O'Neal didn't. Sometimes this happens. One guy doesn't hear it. Like, it's actually kind of funny. I was watching the Packers Commanders film on the plane back today. And because I was waiting for the games to start, I hate central start times because I'm so used to my Pacific 10 a.m. start time. So I'm like 11 a.m. I'm like, oh my God, I want these games. And I'm watching it, and a right tackle for the Packers goes the wrong way. And it actually worked for them on a run play because the linebackers read it and started going. They just jumped over with it, and it's just like a clear run. But yeah, it's kind of funny. Sometimes that can work. But even McCarthy's super young. That's the appeal of him, is that, okay, this is a moldable ball of clay that we are going to give one of the best quarterback coaches in the NFL, let him work with it. But it looks like it's still a big, big work in progress. And I didn't think the Falcons defense, they look improved, but it's not the most tenacious unit to me. And I did think that there are some opportunities out there for him to make. He had to overthrow the nail, and I don't want to like dissect everything because this is what we do to all these quarterbacks, but there is, stuff's got to speed up. And especially for a team that, if you look at this team, it's vet laden, so it's not like they're trying to revamp. They're not trying to reload or anything. So it was a little concerning tonight and the first three quarters of last week, which we were kind of trying to talk about as well. Also, I want to give you a little shout out to maybe just use it as a lead in. Why don't you take a little bow for your all juice team? How about Angie Makuba?
Today was a good day for us.
Wasn't it? Yeah. Give it a little shout. Explain what the all juice team is and kind of maybe some shout. And also this is my transition to Eagles and Chiefs. So that's wrapping up Falcons, Vikings.
Well,
we're 2 second year quarterbacks. Yeah. There's a Falcons and Falcons this all juice team. Correct?
Yeah. 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 Billy Bowman. All juice team is a project I work on with Charles Robinson here, in honor of our old coworker, past Yahoo worker, old friend of a bunch of us. Therese Perry passed away a few years ago, just carrying on his legacy with the all juice team. And we had Billy Bowman, safety from Oklahoma, who was drafted by the Falcons in the 4th round, and then Andrew Makuba, who's safety from Texas, drafted in the 2nd round by the Eagles, who both had pretty big games today. So I was pretty pleased with myself. I think the last Vikings Falcons thing that I'll say is I don't know if a defense that's starting 4 rookies should make an offense look that bad. So Vikings, that's a little bit concerning.
Yeah. I know. It's always like, which one is it worse for? Like we were talking Jags Bengals today, and it was like, no, that was worse for the Jags than maybe even good for the actually the update on that news, Adam Schefter came out and said that Joe Burrow might be missing months, as opposed to just a couple of weeks, the severity of the turf toe and everything. So we'll see. Now you might have to have surgery, but not good for the Bengals, even that victory, but spoilers for what we talked about. My last thought actually on the Vikings Falcons game was the 3rd and 1. So this is youth, kind of like the tenacity of youth with a young quarterback and a wild horse. And sometimes the decision-making that 3rd and 1, he sails the throw. That was a stick concept, which is just a quick outbreaker by the tight end. The slot runs a slot fade, and then the outside guy runs a hitch. So it's a stick variation. I believe that one's called shock, if anyone cares. So on that one, Hockenson and Thielen are easy access first downs on 3rd and 1, which to me, if I was a young quarterback, I'd be taking all day. Nickel and diming and making sure I get some completions. And JJ McCarthy unpins it and launches it and misses. It's one of those, it's fine if you hit it, but if you don't hit it, why'd you do that? And that was,
Why'd you throw that?
Why'd you throw it? That was that's the bonus answer if you get it, but you don't have to do that. Right. Like right then and there, just get the first down and just keep moving. And they had the throw right there because he'd been stuffed on some sneaks. He's not the biggest guy. And that's also what's showing up too. It's kind of the weight stuff that there has been some concerns about kind of really just shows up a little bit. Yeah, he's
getting the gym, bro.
His play strength isn't, he kind of gets ragdolled a little bit. He looks like Jeff Hardy, the wrestler. Kind of just gets really thrown around and everything. Yeah, they're probably the same weight. I mean,
same build.
That's where my whole 205 pound theory comes from from Derek.
There's kind of a deep cut for the sickos. There's a Raiders Seahawks game, I think in London from way back, maybe 2017. And there is when Martavis Bryant was on the Raiders, and there's a sneak in that play where Derek is churning his legs and doesn't move a single yard. And the camera pans to Martavis, like it's a scene out of The Office. He just drops his head and shakes, and they cut the commercial. It is incredible. It's incredible. Like, you have to go look it up if you listen to this.
I know exact play. I know the visual. I know everything. I know exactly what you're talking about. We never did sneaks with him or with the Raiders for that kind of reason too. But yeah, you need some size in there. That's why you see some tight ends doing it now. Another game that happened today was the Super Bowl rematch. I also just want to kind of get, you have any thoughts on that game? Are we more worried about McCarthy right now or where the Chiefs stand right now? And they fall 0-2. The Eagles go 2-0. And it was an ugly game. Like, we didn't really focus on three ups or three highs and three lows later because, or on that section, because it was just, bleh. It was just not a game worth talking about. But what were your takeaways from that game?
How the hell did the Chiefs find themselves here? Like, is Patrick Mahomes going to be your leading rusher this season? What happened? That's I guess, like, my biggest takeaway.
Something that works.
Like, right. I mean, as great as Mahomes is, and like, today is another example of, like, how just incredible a football player he is. I mean, I just don't know how they can sustain an offense where, like, he's going to be their leading rusher most weeks because of scrambles and, like, finishing plays after contact. No, that can't be it. They got to figure out something fast here as far as, like, a little supporting patch that they can throw on there until Rasheed gets back. But, man, I just can't believe how thin they've gotten on offense. I mean, you know, at least they've started to reinvest in the offensive line. You know, Josh Simmons looks like he's going to be a hit as he moves forward. But, man, like, get some receiver talent. Because the thing is, like, you can justify – you can make a case to justify, like, where they've been over the past year because they've won a bunch of games and went to the Super Bowl. But, like, you have Michael Jordan on your team. Winning games, that doesn't mean anything anymore. Like, the expectation is you're in the AFC Championship game. That's, like, that's your floor. So I just kind of think where they're at right now is just unacceptable. I think he's going to have, you know, like, today is a good example where I kind of see where Mahomes living in this sphere this season, where 16 for 29, 187 yards, one touchdown, one pick with a 79.5 QBR for the day. Like, the counting stats aren't great, but if you watch the game, you know that he was, like, a driving force for their chances to win. And if anyone else had stepped up, they probably would have won that game. It sucks to see someone this good go through something like this, because we deserve more as football fans.
It's Mahomes and Spags, it feels like. It's like, because it doesn't even feel like the defense has any juice. Who's, like, who's making plays for him? But that offense, it's like, I don't feel like anyone breaks a tackle. You know, it's just like, it's just catch, tackle. And if you're going to work like an Andy, like, this is becoming just a pure West Coast Andy Reid offense, like, the purest form. If you're going to be like that, you need guys that create yards after the catch. Like, those are the famous runs or routes and everything and combinations of these types of offenses. And it's just, oh no, it's just Mahomes, like, scrambling again. Like, he was successful, 5 for 7, had a touchdown, great touchdown. But it's like, you can't live that way for 18 weeks. That's like playoff attitude. That's like, got to win it kind of like, yeah, I'm going to run it today. That's how we have to do it. It's just like, No, it feels different right now, even though there are some, like you said, Simmons is a positive sign, hitting like 18.2 miles an hour as he ran down that interception, you know, with Kelsey, and Kelsey wasn't even try on it either, but they just look slow. They just lack juice. There's no fear when you watch the Chiefs. There's no that. I always just thought that, like, Mahomes was always like Michael Myers. Like, he's always coming. And then that, like, now it's just like, Michael Myers, just, it's not him. It's more like he can't even get out of prison. He can't get out of the loony bin because it's just like, you know, like, that doesn't even matter. He's in there. We don't have to worry about it. Jamie Lee Curtis on the Eagles. They won the game. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I was about to say, last thing I have on Chiefs and Mahomes, if Mahomes keeps up this rushing pace, he will finish the season with 1,045 rushing yards. Come on now. It's crazy.
That is. It's not that. That's
1,000 rushing yards.
Justin Fields territory.
Yes.
I know. Yeah. And everyone's going to think he's just the playground quarterback still, even though he's become like one of the smartest quarterbacks in the league and one of the most astute ones and aware ones, and pre-snap he's great. So yeah, and I it's tough to watch sometimes, but he's still brilliant. Real quick, Eagle side, their offense feels like a slog too, even though if they won the game. You know, defense is doing nice things, and again, I want to just keep seeing it. At least they did this week. Last week they're kind of getting shredded, but offense wise But A.J. Brown ran the most slants of his career, according to Keegan Abdu, our buddy at Next Gen Stats. And, like, if you look at his route chart, it's just, like, underneath. It's all under routes and slant routes. Under routes are 5 yards and in, so basically the same thing. And barely anything vertical. And then you look at Jalen Hurts' chart for the season so far. And Jalen Hurts on throws this season of 10 or more air yards. I got to blow up my notes so I can read it. So under 10 yards, he's 32 of 36. 174 yards. Okay. 4.8 yards an attempt. He's only thrown 5 passes this year through 2 games. They're past 10 air yards, 10 or more air yards. He's 2 of 5 for 79 yards. So this is the one to Dotson, I believe, in week 1. And then this week was the Devontae Smith dunk. So I don't know. That, again, I talk about formulas and the math for offenses. Well, obviously, they're going to run the ball well. It's the Eagles. The Chiefs actually still have a decent run game, or run defense. But you got to get explosives through the air. Otherwise, you're going to start playing good, good teams in the NFC. Packers, Rams, amongst others. And it's just like, I don't know. They're not, you got to build those explosives, especially if the run game's not going to get all of them. Even though Saquon's ridiculous and does something every single game. So Eagles are kind of there right now too, even though they're 2-0. It just doesn't feel, it feels very tight.
Yeah. But when they're in the NFC championship game, you better not bring up that this game happened for your own safety
ever,
you know,
ever. It never happened.
Another sub 100-yard passing game. You know, you just gotta pretend these don't happen.
Hey, he won the game. The Eagles won another one. Also, Nick Sirianni had Nick Sirianni probably threw the challenge flag further than Hurts did today. He launched that thing. I was really proud of him because that's actually like, that goes a long way with me. My dad was a big red flag chucker. He would get that thing to midfield. Yeah. So I always appreciate those. But yeah, it was a very interesting day in week 2 Sunday NFL action. Charles and I went live on YouTube earlier to react, analyze, overreact, underreact to all of it, especially the early slate, which was so much fun. Very, very fun witching hour. We do that through 3 highs, 3 lows. That conversation is coming up right after the break. Hello and welcome back to Football 301. I am your host, Nate Tice. We are here to review and react to another fun Sunday of NFL action. Week 2 this time around. It felt too hot, too fast, too furious today, especially that morning slate, which we're going to be talking about, recapping a great slate of games. And to help me do that, just like every single Sunday, my guy, Mr. Forverts, Charles McDonald. How you doing today, Chuck?
I'm doing good. I've recovered from the whiplash of that 1 p.m. slate. And I've been able to center myself a little bit because it got wild as hell. Because it felt like it was like, man, some of these games are blowouts and then it turned crazy at the witching hour. But this is kind of what you get when the NFL wants everyone to watch Chiefs Eagles at 4:25. We're going to slam the morning slate full and you guys get to have your fun from that 30 minute stretch. So good. So good when you have like a logjam these games.
It almost felt like witching hours for a while. Like just because one of the games in particular went quite long, which we're going to talk about. But before we get into that, also check us out on the Yahoo Sports Network, our brand new streaming TV channel. The Yahoo Sports Network is available to stream on leading fast services. It's also streaming live 24/7 on yahoosports.tv, where you can catch all the shows on your phone or your browser. And my voice isn't a little scratchy because that Sunday slate of games, I was also at a wedding this weekend. So maybe it's a combo of that, but you get to hear some bass today from my voice. But we're going to start off. We're going to get into it. We're going to get into this Sunday with ups and downs of week 1 with 3 highs and 3 lows. You mentioned it, Chuck. That witching hour was great. And that's what we're starting off with high 1. That was that early slate witching hour madness. I think it was kind of, I mean, shoot, there's about 40 games we can talk about there. Yeah, Seahawks Steelers was a battle. Patriots Dolphins was a sloppy steak battle. 49ers Saints went to the wire. Jags Bengals went to the wire, which we'll talk about throughout this show. But the really kind of the piece de resistance of that morning slate was Giants Cowboys going into overtime with 99 passing plays, 984 total yards. Russell Wilson finished with 450 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, partying like it's 2009, his highest EPA per dropback since week 17 of 2022. That's like 3 teams ago for Russell. Dak Prescott finished with 361 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a victory. This game had 26 penalties, including an onslaught of personal fouls at one point. I think there was 5 on one play. 266 yards of penalties total. Where to start with this game, Chuck? What is your takeaways of the witching hour, the Cowboys, Giants, madness, just everything that happened in that morning slate?
I got to be honest. Like I feel like I've been so overexposed to the New York football scene that whenever I get a chance to like not pay attention to it, I usually take it. So I wasn't really aware of what was going on in that game until about the fourth quarter, because I hadn't watched all too much of it. And then I felt like it just turned into some ridiculous, not even a shoot, like a track meet, where no defense could do anything. All the stars were playing at the peak of their abilities. Like you said, the penalties, like Giants offensive tackle James Hudson, he got four penalties in a row during a stretch. It was really, really crazy. And even just to get like kind of like a weird prime Russell Wilson game, it was fun just to see him throwing the deep ball, getting Malik Nabers involved. But like, if you're looking at it from a Cowboys perspective, this is like when you build the bend don't break defense, but you miss the part that makes it bend, you know? So you're just getting absolutely killed. When you have DBs that like to take chances on the ball, yeah. When you have DBs that like to take chances on the ball, like Diggs and Bland, that's when it's really mm-hmm. great to have someone like Micah Parsons, because you know sometimes that ball's going to come out errant. But no, they got absolutely shredded today by an offense that I don't think they could replicate this again this season. So shout out to Russell Wilson for getting turned back clock one day. Yeah. That was one of the crazy things that happened in that final little stretch of the witching hour.
And especially when, you know, a lot of Giants fans, including, you know, some people working on the show, were, you know, calling for Jackson Dart. And all of a sudden they, you know, not you, Charles, behind the scenes, but some people also calling for Jackson Dart. And, yeah. And then Russell's just like, all right, this is why you brought me in. It was cool, like you said, to see the deep ball back. You mentioned that those DBs, those Cowboys DBs, really like to take chances on the ball and everything. Under 2.5 seconds, Russell Wilson was 13 of 16 for 85 yards. Okay, 5.3 yards per attempt. Over 2.5 seconds to throw, 60, which was 61% of his attempts, 17 and 25, 365 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 pick, 14.6 yards per attempt. 17 and so 25. Like you said, if the Giants O-line held up, or if they got beat, and I mean, the Cowboys pass rush wasn't really like anything to write home about, it felt like. Neither was the Giants. I mean, the Giants defense overall was like, yeah, a couple splash plays by like Drew Phillips, but he also got beat. Like, you know, and so it's just, the Giants defense, as producer Stone could get ready for some take poker for me in a couple days. I'm ready to fold on that top 10 defense take, because they can't cover anybody. But no, it was a really entertaining game. We got to see some booming kicks as well. We got to see plenty of penalties. I felt like the scene from The Replacements, where everybody's hitting each other. Both teams finished with a success rate about 45%. And like you said, I mean, you just noticed the Malik Nabers, the Giants. Deep ball connection was going. The explosive plays were happening left and right. Got to see some of the young players getting after, like Cam Scataboo. So yeah, it was an entertaining game. And then on the flip side, the Cowboys offense, it's like, man, if you knew this Cowboys offense was going to cook like this, sure would have been nice to have a defense to match, like a number one pass rusher in the world right now to be on that defense in the prime of his career. That would be really sweet, maybe going into this year in a wide open NFC. But we're going to talk more about this morning slate of games, because it just like so much to pick from, so much to choose from, including game to even mention, because it didn't really matter for the witching hour, because this team might have heard me maybe saying some stuff, and I immediately put my foot in my mouth about John Morton. That we're getting on to high number two. The Lions offense explodes. We debut a segment called Dog of the Week, and that dog is in the shelter right now. that was we're not taking that one back out. Lions no. Blew him out of the water. This could have been a low too, like Bears defense low, because I thought the Bears offense actually had some nice stretches there, especially in the first half. DeAndre Swift should be benched for life. But I thought the Lions offense, this was like, oh, this is great. This is fantastic. This is what we expect. A ton of play action. Tons of Amon-Ra St. Brown across the middle. But watching this game, what do you think about the Lions? Is this kind of more what you expected going into this year?
I guess I got to say yeah, because I didn't really expect them to be like, I guess, as bad as they were versus Green Bay. But right. I need to look up where it finished. Green Bay might be the real deal, man. That defense. Yeah. We'll be talking about that a bunch this season. Replicating something like this would be almost impossible. Like what the Lions did today, it just makes me want to talk about the Bears. Like, for the first one of the striking things I remember seeing today, like as the game was happening, was at the end of the third quarter, going to the fourth, the Lions were averaging 9.5 yards per play. Like,
they finished at 8.8.
Quarters, they have four. That's ridiculous. Like, that's literally video game stuff. Like, if someone did that to you in a video game, you're like, I'm not playing this again. This is ridiculous. That's trash. That's cheese. But through three quarters, they have 48 plays for 456 yards. They were averaging almost 13 yards an attempt. Success rate is 55%. I mean, just a complete beat down. And I just wonder, that's, like, when stuff happens like this for the Bears, how do you let this spiral this out of control? Because I just don't think, and I know obviously I'm dead wrong in the top 10 defense take for the Bears. Top 10 defense, don't let that happen ever. But I just feel like they have a little bit more talent here than you would expect with some of these results. I know some people said they're missing Jalen Johnson. Okay. Mm-hmm. 52 points though,
but
9.5 yards per play, like that's really bad. It's really bad.
Yeah, I should have maybe noticed Kyler Gordon not being out, and it's like, huh, where's Amon Ross St. Brown like to work? Oh yeah, and then how Amon Ross St. Brown finish? Oh, 9 catches, 11 targets, 115 yards, 7 rushing yards, 3 touchdowns. And I bet you if I looked up his route tree right now, not even the ones that he was targeted on, it was the same over route over the middle, play action over route, play action over route. And I was just, I know, I was kind of. The Bears, the offense or defense, just felt defanged. Like they just like couldn't, like, just like they didn't do anything. I was looking up play action stats for Goff, and then actually I stopped because I was like, well, let's just actually just use his total stats: 23-28, 5 touchdowns, 156 passer rating. I don't even have to use advanced stats, but I will. 65% success rate. We were freaking out about Fields last week, you know, and his success rate, and that was with all the scrambles. This is just working from the pocket and chucking it. Like you mentioned the yards per play. Oh, I'm so glad they shared this throwing chart, because Goff was on one today. He wasn't sacked the whole day. 52 points on 58 plays. Like it felt like the Wisconsin teams I got to play with. Like it really did. They're shredding them on everything. Like anything they want. 45% rushing success rate. Jahmyr Gibbs was doing stuff. David Montgomery got in the action. But no, this is what it did. It felt like, you know, Ben Johnson didn't even leave. It was like John Morton was like, okay, all right, no, I'm back to like what's working. I thought the O-line did a good job. But yeah, the Bears defense was just like, I got to rewatch it. Yeah. Like, was it predictable? Was it just like nobody winning? Like it was those DBs being out, like really hindering, obviously a little bit, but I thought they'd have a better pass rush. It just was not explosive for a defense, if that makes sense.
I have a very small sample size John Morton take that I was thinking about as this game was going on. He might be like very sensitive to game flow as far as what he's calling, like maybe a little bit more sensitive than Ben Johnson was, because today that was the front runner's offense, man. Like they're like once they got the lead, you know, they're running the ball. They had the play action stuff working off it, but I felt like versus the Packers, like once it started to get down a little bit, he was like, okay, I'm going back to what I know from the past. You know, we're just going to drop back. We're going to get after it. And I think you kind of saw two extremes of what he was willing to do on a Sunday, and obviously it's going to lie in the middle as it goes along. But I was just noticing, like, okay, so when he's up, like they'll run all the stuff you saw from Ben Johnson last year. When it's down, maybe we don't know yet. So I'd be keeping tabs on that and just how he calls games in relation to what the score is.
Yeah, I think that's maybe a good point, that maybe it's just the highs can still be there for this line. I mean, it's just they have so many good players that's always just the argument against it. It's like you can't. Yeah. It's like there's an analogy about jockeys and horse racing. Like a good jockey might not win you a race, but they can't lose it. And it's almost like the opposite for coaches, or like a bad coach. Like they can lose you the game. So maybe it's just like you say, that game script can really affect them. They might have some more, might be more volatile this year, but still have the highs, but maybe just have lower lows. So maybe that's what it is. I'm just trying to figure out the lines, because I watched the defense. That first touchdown, Roman Dunze had a great game. And the first touchdown they had on the crossing route, that's what I was kind of getting after with the Lions defense, which is actually even more worrisome to me now, because they just have busts. Mm-hmm. It's not just like a guy's losing. It's just guys busting, and they're not running like crazy stuff where it's like, oh, you have to match this. It's just straight man coverage. So that's where that one I'm really keeping my eye on more. But yeah, I feel like this offense is just so insulated. You still have Dan Campbell giving his opinion. You still have Hank Fraley. And I mean, you just felt it today. I mean, this NFC North is just, everyone's just going to beat the crap out of each other. So I can't wait for some more of these matchups that we're going to get to see.
Yeah.
High number three. This was one of yours. And this was also from the morning slate, in a pretty entertaining game featuring maybe not the most noteworthy players, but a very entertaining game. And what was high number three for you, Chuck?
I'm giving this one to Kyle Shanahan, just because I know it had to bring him some joy to finally get that Mac Jones game that we know he craved back when they traded the 3 first round picks for Trey Lance, and you know, it's funny how the circle works, and now we're exactly. But you know, it's funny because I kind of like had an eyeball on this game, you know, partly because of what you said, not too many. The most interesting game, I think, of the weekend. And then, you know, every time I look, like, Mac Jones had pretty solid stat line, finished 26 for 39, 279, 3 touchdowns, no picks. Probably the most efficient game he's played since his rookie year, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
It's been a minute for him now. So it's just funny to see, like, when even as a supporting cast clearly is not, like, as dominant as it was in the past. You know, Kyle is still capable of just throwing just any old quarterback in there some weeks and drawing up a game plan. And I know the Saints are not the toughest opponent. Their defensive line is really not what it used to be, but still, like, a lot of teams, they can't bank on, okay, well, we got our backup quarterback against a bad team. Still don't know how it goes. And then when Kyle Shanahan rolls out Mac Jones with a diminished supporting cast based on what we used to in the past, they still go out and they score, and he has a really efficient day throwing the ball. So I just found that funny. And just another reminder that, you know, even if things get tough for some more talented people in the league, like, they'll still show you why they are considered that, you know, when, you know, looking at Patrick Mahomes.
They're good minds.
Yeah, that was a tough one today.
Honestly, some of the good coaches are more fun to watch when they have lesser talent, or in theory, lesser talent, like, you know, perceived.
In theory,
you know, you are playing. Yeah, I mean, Mac Jones, it was like a multiverse version of, like, the usual 49ers like cast of characters. So it was like you should be wearing, like, mustaches or something. But it was like, so Mac Jones said Brock Purdy, you got Luke Farrell and Jake Tongs, I believe his name is, but they did their best impression of, like, Purdy to Kittle at moments. Juszczyk was out, I believe, for a minute, and then you got Kendrick Bourne catching passes. What you mentioned, though, like, your whole point kind of going, like, hey, Shanahan can really dial him up. There was a couple today, especially to CMC, I had that same thought. Like, the designer plays are just so great always with Shanahan. We think of all the run game stuff, but then he has these pass plays that's like they know how to kind of get the coverage they want because they check plays, but then they just kind of manipulate it perfect. So the CMC receiving touchdown, they had him at the number 3 spot, so basically like a tight end. And so it's him, Pierce all at the slot, who's usually an outside receiver, Juwan Jennings on the outside. It's like, just, okay, that's an interesting trio over there on the 3-by-1 side. Then it's CMC runs like an out route. It wasn't like a deep out route, but kind of middle out route. Pearsall's in the slot, runs a dig route. And all that does is it splits the coverage because it just gets two guys working opposite leverage. And it's like not that overly complicated, but it's just like getting the right players in the right spots and just like, because, okay, CMC's in the slot or in number 3 spot, the defense then gets more basic. So, okay, boom, we got the coverage we want. Then we're going to run this play. Okay, it's going to split the coverage. Boom, touchdown. I thought that was so cool. And then he had like a 3rd and 10. Yeah. CMC is running a comeback from the backfield. Like the Jennings. Like, I mean, just stuff where it's like, yeah, you can do it on a whiteboard, but like he just goes up and like they do it. And it helps when you have Christian McCaffrey. But then, and then the last one, like the Jennings TD throw, that's where I was like, hey, Mac Jones, that was a hell of a throw. It was a bender on 3rd and 10 against a disguised cover 2. And so, like, that's the thing. We talked about it on the previous show. It's like, Mac Jones could get it done. Like, you know, maybe the cast of characters isn't the super friends like it's been. But, I mean, it's not too bad. You know, maybe it's like Guardians of the Galaxy or something. Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's just like the lesser version, you know. The outcast version, but it works.
Yeah, I thought one thing that's been kind of cool to see, like, as Shanahan, you talk about like the guys who are actively seeing things change on their team and like adapting their play calls. So I think Shanahan's done a good job like adapting this Christian McCaffrey receiving game to like who he is as an athlete now, because he's not the guy that has like the burning speed that he used to, where like, once he get loose, he could catch a crease and then, you know, off for 60 yards. Doesn't quite have that speed anymore after the injuries, but still has a lot of the short area stuff. And I thought he did a good job of like allowing him to like take advantage of that instead of, you know, maybe where you saw a wheel route in the past as a comeback now because he can get off a little bit easier instead of having to burn it deep. So I like what Shanahan's doing again. It's pretty cool.
I know. And I mean, we're not talking about him, but like you watch the Rams today and it's like, oh yeah, these good play callers, they're really fun to watch every week, even if it doesn't matter who's out there. So that's a great point. That's a really good point about the kind of like his speed and explosiveness and stuff. So now it's to the negative section, the lows. Low number one, the Jacksonville Jaguars should make sure Joe Burrow is healthy when they play the Cincinnati Bengals because they can't seem to beat Jake Browning. They play the wrong JB in these games. The Bengals win 31-27, and I am like just sad with the Jags. Do you really want me to put you guys like in timeout again? Like, is there a ban that has to happen again? I thought Brian Thomas Jr. was wildly disappointing today outside the drop in the red zone on fourth down.
For him.
He had true alligator arm moments that one caused an interception and one was could have maybe been a touchdown. And I have people going like, oh, it's a hospital ball. So I have the privilege. I can look at all 22 early. I can't post it. So I'll check some plays every once in a while. I looked at it. You
gotta trust us here.
It's embarrassing. Like, it's embarrassing. Like, and people are called a hospital. It's not a hospital ball, like, which also should be taken out of the lexicon anyways. But it's a bender or an inbreaker. And the DB is on the other side of the hash. Like, if he just runs, he's catching and splitting it. But he stops, slows, and looks at the DB and holds his arm up. True alligator arms. Really disappointing for a guy I considered into the season a top 10 receiver because he was so awesome last year. But this is why... The Jags are just, I said that he becomes 5'6" between the hashes as well. You got Trevor Lawrence waving off Liam Cohen. You got Trevor also had a red zone pick. He also threw one play. He was 3 yards past the line of scrimmage and threw a ball because he thought he had a pass interference on a play. They're just, I don't know. They have moments. The opening quarter, I was like, oh, man, they look at that Jags offense. You know, congrats to the Bengals for winning and pulling out this victory. It's huge. You know, Joe Burrow might have turf toe, so we'll see what happens there. But man, this felt just more disappointing for the Jags. So I'm curious how you want to unleash on them because I could just keep going and going.
I mean, the second half by the Jags was just terrible. I mean, so they averaged in the first half, the Jaguars offense averaged 7.4 yards per play. In the second half, they were averaging like 3.9. While the Bengals jumped up to 6.3 yards per play in the second half. So really just like both sides of the ball, really just a total collapse. When you needed it most, it's like, damn, like you keep kind of seeing this sometimes. Now, hopefully it doesn't get as extreme as when, you know, they were like 8-3 a couple years ago when we're in the driver's seat in the AFC. And then this game happened.
And then played the Bengals.
And then everything fell apart. And that was the last time the Jaguars were remotely fun and watchable. And it felt like, things were hopeful over there. But, I mean, in the second half, you run 34 plays for 133 yards. The only part of the game that at that point that was working was, you know, a couple ETN carries. But the way that the drop-back game really fell off, like you said, Brian Thomas Jr., I thought that was maybe his worst game that I've seen him play so far. Trevor Lawrence had some really nice moments in this first half. Second half, you know, it got a little shaky sometimes. But I really just think, like, you gave up 6.3 yards per play to a Jake Browning-led offense. I mean, what's the deal there? I thought they had enough talent maybe to play a little bit better than that. But, dude, like Tyson Campbell got torched today. They couldn't really get anything going in the second half on defense. Really, really bad look, I think, for them.
It's like talk out of both sides of your mouth with the Jaguars. It's like because that's the thing. Is like they had moments where I was like, man, this looks great. Like, you know, Trevor's trusting different receivers. Diamond Brown's having a nice moment. Okay, they're working out Travis. Okay, they're working this all out. Okay, they're rotating the backs. Like, Bashal Tootin had some nice moments. I'm like, okay, they had a 50% rushing success rate today. They finished with a 48.6 overall success rate, and they had 3 turnovers on defense. If you told me that against a backup quarterback, like, oh, so they won by 17? You know, they won by 14? And no, it was down to the wire, and they lost the game. Yeah, it's just... There's something about this team where it's just like they're just so dumb at times. And I know it's going to take time to refresh it, but they just feel that way that even today where they felt efficient at times, then they just had some of the worst moments of the week. And it's just, just very, very frustrating. That's just always like one step forward, one step back, or 2 steps back sometimes. So that's a game I'm going to definitely rewatch because it's just it's leaving a weird taste in my mouth. And I'm sure Jags fans feel the same. Bengals pull off a huge win. Now they have to figure out what the Joe Burrow injury is, what that's going to be. We already see what Brock Purdy's missing time with a turf toe variant, you know, that mutated and turned into the Red Hulk or something or into Venom. So now, but anyways, we're going to move on to that's enough Jags. They're so close. They're just like, I'm hovering that band over them right now. But we go on to low number two. and I was about to do this for this other team that we're going to talk about. Patriots and Dolphins, just sloppiness. Just sloppy game. Sloppy game. 22 combined missed tackles. The 22 combined penalties. The Patriots had 12 missed tackles, which is their highest missed tackle rate since week 4 in 2021, according to our friend Keegan Abdu from Next Gen Stats. The A-chan was running wild. Everybody was running wild. Drake May had a great game, probably his most efficient from beginning to start game. Only really missed one throw off the top, back of my mind, where Booty didn't settle on one. Keyshawn Booty looks great, by the way. So that looks kind of a fun development here.
He does.
He looks really, he's really actually trustworthy now, which is like, I'm like shocked. So it's like, yeah, that's like a really fun development for them.
He was supposed to be the guy after Chase and Jefferson, and it never happened for reasons that you can go Google for yourself. But lots of reasons. Yeah, I don't even have enough show to get to them. But it looks like some of the talent that people were hyping on a long time ago now has really started to at least take hold a little bit. I don't know what clicked for him, but thank God that they got at least someone out there. You know, it's been tough sledding for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, because Diggs ain't it. The Patriots had a moment where they had, it was like 8 minutes or so left in the game. They had the lead, kind of one of those drives where it's not a 4 minute drive, but it's a drive you really want to like eat some clock, maybe get a field goal out of. They had like two false starts, an illegal shift. Garrett Bradbury rolled a shotgun snap on the ground, and then he did the double whammy of having a bad snap and then in the middle of the play turning around like he's a ninth grader. And so he bad snaps it, turns around, and then so both interior linemen just run right by him. So it's like, just hold up. If you have a bad snap, just hold up. Like, you know, just like, just eat it. Like, because otherwise you're leaving your quarterback on the ground just getting smoked. But yeah, I don't know. They allowed a punt return for a touchdown. And it was funny, the commenter, I didn't even know who it was, but I heard him say, he goes, you know, sometimes that's the issue when you have a big booming punt, you outkick your coverage. And then I watched the replay. It's like they had five guys there and they missed five tackles. Like that wasn't like out kicking your coverage. That was just bad tackling. And then on the next play, they just return a kick for a touchdown. The Patriots do. So it's just like, you know, Tyreek Hill is returning punts now. Like it's just like everything about this game just felt weird. Like it really did. And then I don't know. And then there's Drake May with, I believe he had over a 60% success rate. Had a lollipop throw touchdown to Booty. That was beautiful. And then he had the wheel route to Stevenson where he stepped up. We made Phillips miss. That was really nice. I know it's a low, but I'm sneaking in some May praise here because he was really fun today.
They had a drop back. The Patriots had a drop back success rate today of 63%. The Dolphins also had 59.9%. So, you know, lots of cleanup. And it was so interesting because when I was watching this game, like, it just felt like the Dolphins, like even like you start look at the end of the game and you see, oh, Tua had like, you know, a nice box score game, but it never felt like he was actually in control of like playing well during the game. You know, his EPA numbers are great. Success numbers are great. When I watched the game, I was like, this feels like it's about to crack any second. And then, you know, even though you get to the final result, 33-27, wow, you know, so exciting. Like, no, this is a sloppy game between two, like pretty obviously bad teams. But it's okay for the Patriots to be like where they are in terms of their team quality. The Dolphins, we know we had the offseason where we were just yelling about how much it looks like they've fallen off, but to be like this bad, man, like this bad, that's there's no excuse for that.
No, there's not. And especially for a defense and teams that want to be revamped and everything. I mean, or offense, I should say. And like, that should be the expectation. And it's just like at the end, they, like when it's third and long, they're just like, it just feels like, oh, they have no shot here. Like once they hit like a middle screen, because like Tua is not pushing the ball, he's going to check something down. So like you say, it's like statistically, it feels fine during the middle of the game. But when it comes down to crunch time, and I know Dolphins fans feel this and are complaining about it now, it's just like, oh, no, they're not going to pull this out because he's not going to attack down the field or not going to do that next thing. You know, he took five sacks. That's an issue too. Like he's not for a ton of yards or anything. But, you know, he's under duress, like, and it's not like that's his wheelhouse to be performing during that. So let's move on to low number three. This was Steelers offense fell a little flat, / Seahawks defense kind of took control. But yeah, just Steelers offense, kind of, Steelers just kind of fell apart as the game went along. And Steelers overall, because he even had Caleb Johnson, who I'm like, I got to see this guy on the field. I got to see this guy on the field. And then he does that. And I'm like, okay, I understand Mike Tomlin and Arthur Smith, why you're keeping him on the bench for now. As he allows the gimme touchdown because he doesn't understand the rules.
Okay, but like, the thing is, like, you don't even have to understand the new rules to avoid that mistake. Like, at no point, on a kickoff, the ball is live, bro.
Yeah.
Like, even in college, if you muff a kickoff or a punt, it's live. Like, I know he felt it touch his hands and his helmet. So even if you think, oh, bounce back so far, it's, you know, maybe it's just going to roll the back of the end zone for safety. Go make sure. Like, what? And then just to watch him stand there as the Seahawks ran to recover for a touchdown, I was like, what just happened there? Because even before you invited the new rules, like on an old kickoff, if he just let the ball smack him in the face and then it goes in the end zone, it's the same exact rule. So I don't know why. And it's the same for college too and high school. So I don't really know what happened there, but I do know this. He's gone. Like, he's never going to play again this year. Like, like you said.
Rodgers and Arthur Smith?
Yeah.
No.
We're not going to see him for
3 months.
Yeah. Like, so maybe next year for him. But that was bad.
I was so baffled at how close he was. Trust me, after watching when I was a kid, watching Plaxico Burress fumble a ball because he didn't realize that in the NFL, you have to be touched down. Like, ever since that, I've been also a Steeler his rookie year. Yeah. Ever since that, I've never been shocked by what a college player just doesn't know. Like, it's or rookie doesn't know. Like, nothing has ever shocked me ever again. Ryan Tannehill not knowing what the divisions are, nothing ever shocks me with what a rookie does and does not know.
Shoot. Last week, Brian Callahan not knowing that an elbow coming down makes it a catch when you're trying to get two inside. Crazy.
I know. It is. And I mean, the Seahawks got rolling in the second half. This is kind of what I expected. I thought they matched up really well against the Steelers. In the second half, the Seahawks finished with a 52% success rate, 44% rushing, 60% passing, 7 explosive plays in the second half, almost a 23% explosive play rate, which is ridiculous. And then Rodgers, on the other hand, as soon as he gets under pressure, he's done. Like, he just starts, he it's so crazy because he's got to just throw. And I think that's an underrated thing with Rodgers is how much he relied on his athleticism. So now it's kind of a weird, how he plays is just a weird disconnect of how he wants to play, which is just getting old. You can see this on the screen, but Rodgers under pressure today, 3 for 11, 36 yards, a pick, 2.8 passer rating, if you like your missionary box score stats, 3 sacks, overall finished with a 33% dropback success rate. He's not the main breadwinner of this offense. He kind of just has to keep it on the rails, but you can't. 33% dropback rate. Why do we get rid of Russell and Justin Fields if that's what you're delivering here without the rushing ability? Like, but I don't need that. That does not helping out this offense or taking it to a new level. I also did think it was funny though. He realizes that he's just playing with a bunch of monster basketball players. So he's just lobbing things up to DK Metcalf. And the 2-point play to Darnell Washington was funny, but Steelers are gonna be in it. They won week one. And I thought this was a good one for the Seahawks, kind of like a complete team game from them. They opened up some stuff on offense. Torrey Horton got a touchdown.
Yes.
Yeah, flying on it. Jalen Ramsey had a very eventful day where he's like botching coverage and he has a great pick. He was just all over the place in good and bad ways. So, yeah, kind of a fun game. I got to watch most of it, truly, while I was on the plane coming home. And then I also just wanted a side mention. Broncos, it's like low 3.5. Broncos losing because of a leverage penalty on a 60-yard field goal. Why are you going for leverage on a 60-yard penalty? My son just came into the room. Also, why are you like calling that? You never call a leverage penalty. It was kind of a double whammy. And also the Colts offense, kind of fun with Daniel Jones against a Broncos defense we have high expectations for. What did you think about that game?
What the hell? I don't get what's happening here with this this Daniel Jones stuff in Indianapolis. But I think you know this. Anthony Richardson will see you on a new team next year. Because I just don't know if they're ever going to turn back. Like, I mean, because now Shane Steichen says, "See, look, like, you know, it wasn't me. That was the problem. We just cut up the Broncos." And it's and honestly, it's cool to see like this offense when it can be at their best. Like Jonathan Taylor had a great game today. Daniel Jones, obviously, you know, he had another good game. Alec Pierce has some big moments. Tyler Warren's getting involved in the passing game, getting big plays. I mean, last week I was like, ah, okay, the Dolphins probably really are just that bad, and we'll see what happens moving forward. But to, like to beat up the Broncos like that, that kind of changes some things, at least about like what the tune for this team should be this season. And quite honestly, it's probably going to save some people's jobs, a lot of people's jobs. You know, a decade of Ballard is about to go in strong into year 11 next year. So I'm really surprised at how good that the Colts have been. And it's kind of fun to watch, because when you ever just have like this, you know, island misfit toys, you don't really expect. They lost their two of their best offensive linemen. They're thrown in Daniel Jones, and bang, first 2 weeks, Daniel Jones having like the best stretch of his career. Random, yeah. Any given Sunday. Like I still want to see more, but right. So far, yeah, got to give them props. They were right. They were right.
I know. I mean, yeah, it was one of those after last week. I was like, all right, let's see what the Jets offense with Fields and Colts offense with Colts. I need some more data points. And it was like the Jets offense today. I was like, ah, there it is. And then the Colts, they just kept scoring and they just kept moving the ball. Daniel Jones finished with his average air yards today was almost 10 yards, 9.8. This dude's just chucking it now. I mean, there's some good design stuff. There was some cool stuff. Tyler Warren, like guys are making plays. Alec Pierce looks amazing. You know, freaking Daniel Jones finished with a 60% dropback success rate. I should have looked up like what his record is. Might be his first game when he played the Bucs when he was with the Giants.
That's got to be the highest. He just needs to get back in that jersey number from college, 17. You know, just had to get that crazy. Yes.
I always said that when I was, you know, scout team quarterback, I played better when I wore 12. And like my best week ever as a scout team quarterback was when I had to be Colt McCoy. And I always swear, I was like, I had to wear 12. That was the only reason. That was the only reason I played well that week. No, but I had a ban on the Colts, and now it's like, oh, that was an easy lift. All right, get it back on the Jags. Just because it's interesting. Even Xavier Howard had like the most like eventful drive of a DB could possibly have. He had like three penalties in a row. He had like two tackles, a missed tackle, all in one drive. So it was just very eventful day in that game. And I thought the Broncos were going to start rolling, but they just couldn't put it away. Even if they had some nice moments, Bo Nix started hot. They had some great designs. Bo Nix wasn't even sacked the whole day. There's only one sack this entire game. So eventful game, eventful day. But we're closing it out today, Charles. I'll be back on Tuesday with Mr. Matt Harmon with more takeaways from week two, maybe catch up on some of the games that we didn't get to today, maybe some extended thoughts after we watched some film, but it should be fun, just like week two Sunday was, just like this show was with Charles McDonald. I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on social media. Charles, where can they find you?
You can find me on Blue Sky, about to live post through a dreadful Falcons national TV game. So yeah, if you want to watch that, come on over. Come on over. I'll probably be sounding just like Nate's son in about 2 hours.
Oh my God, I know. He came and he snuck in. I could tell he was like, I'm not supposed to be in here. So yeah, Jack almost made his first podcast appearance today. We'll be back after reviewing that game. Well, you know, Vikings Falcons action. We'll see if my Hail Mary cashes in, but yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to your timeline for the next couple hours before we meet back up to record that. But make sure, thank you all for joining us live here on YouTube. If you're listening to the podcast form as well, subscribe to us, follow us, rate us, please. But also, you can watch us on YouTube on the Yahoo Sports channel. Make sure to subscribe there, like us there. Also, just check us out every Sunday. We'll be doing this live. Check us out on YouTube. Listen to the podcast after. Do both. We'd appreciate it. But thanks to Stone, Madison, and Austin behind the scenes for making us look and sound good. Thank you all for listening. See you guys next time.